Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. All right, we are podcasting today from a half-completed order. We don't have our diamond, so if there's anything cool like from Boom this week, we haven't read it.
Right, but we'll fill it in next week.
We'll get to it next week. Don't be so. What are you so hasty for?
Yeah, just stop.
Stop pressuring us.
Stop hating Nick.
Yeah, why are you so mad at Nick?
It's okay. Nick says,
Nick says it's okay though. He will bear your sins.
Yes.
As the martyr of the store.
Yes, Nick is our sin eater of Rogues Gallery.
Interesting. I didn't know I had that
title. Yeah, you're the sin eater.
Yeah, okay. If you don't mind getting like one of those little "my name is" stickers and just put sin eater on it.
People will come in with Nick, their fruits that absorb the sins of their loved ones, and you must eat the fruits.
Sure, Nick the sin eater.
Also, he could inhale clouds of flies like the dude in Green Mile.
Oh yeah,
he's like an update of a sin eater idea. Yeah.
Can I eject them out like the mummy from The Mummy?
Yes,
you can spit them out like the fruit of the dude in One Piece.
Whatever. I mean, that's with some velocity.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's a good plan.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
I see no fault.
By the way, you know, I remember like a month ago, I was like, "Fall has arrived," and yet, and we are, by the way, going to get a temperature drop tonight. Yep. But in the meantime, it's like 100 degrees out.
I no longer fear the temperature drop. Summer forever is one.
Yeah, clearly.
And the only price is catastrophic weather everywhere.
Yeah, that's
not good. We're about to hit like 50 degree lows for the next like, I know. 4 nights.
If anything, I know that it's good. Like, that part's good. I'm just lamenting. I'm like, it's sad that I was doing my goofy fall riff, and it was like a month ago because we had a little bit of cool air. And I really did think it'd be cooler by now, and instead, 100 degrees.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, well, record setting.
That meteorologist everybody loves that I hate.
Avery Tomasco.
Yes.
Yep.
Because he loves how cold it is, and I'm like, you're in Texas. Start loving the warmth. Anyway.
Yeah.
He also loves rain, which I don't like. But he was posting about how there's been no rain in October, and I'm like, much as I don't like rain, I don't like sad rainy days, I do understand we need water to live, and it is kind of just distressing, like, usually this is like the rainiest month. We've got no water at all in October.
Yeah, yep.
People love our weather talk, by the way. They've specifically said they like our weather talk.
Well, you know what we can relate it to? Let's bring it around to, because like, Randy, what you're about to get is our future will be Mad Max future.
Yes.
Giant dust storms with lightning in them.
It's true.
And assless chaps raiders.
Yes.
Driving cars
all
around.
Chaps are assless.
That's the post-apocalyptic future that I want.
It's what we're getting. I'm sorry.
I feel like there should be a better option.
You want a zombie future, Nick?
God, no.
That's Nick wants a YA, like, Divergent future or whatever was.
We're all
not Divergent. If I'm going to do anything, it's going to be Maze Runner.
Okay. No. Nick is shooting for Maze Runner. What we're getting, no matter what we ask for, is Road Warrior.
Road Warrior.
obviously, we really want Star Trek and their holodecks and all that stuff.
You got to go through Road Warrior to get to Star Trek.
Right. This is a known thing.
We're going
to
get that one movie that has all of the genres.
Doomsday.
Doomsday.
Neil Marshall's Doomsday.
Okay, by the way, people need to see Doomsday. It's ridiculous.
Or if nothing else, see the trailer. It's bonkers.
You know what? What if we got the future that's the Mortal Engines future?
Oh, no. The cities
on big, like, oversized wheels and
tank
treads.
Remember how cool that trailer was and how terrible that movie was?
But you know, I don't know if you remember, we put it on one time at the store, and for about 10 minutes, it actually looked fun.
For about 10 minutes.
And then suddenly it sucked.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It sucked pretty bad.
But if you haven't seen it, though, y'all, go watch the original Mortal Engines trailer. It's okay.
Yeah, watch the trailer for Neil Marshall's Doomsday. And whoever did Mortal Engines.
Yeah. Doomsday is a fun movie.
It is.
It's a future that involves Road Warrior stuff, knights, zombies.
Yes, zombies.
They rolled the dice.
Some kind of arena.
Yeah, they rolled the dice and that's what they got.
Yep.
And it's against all odds, pretty fun.
I think it's also like a virus.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
They just, again, all the things.
Yeah. They rolled the D100 table and they came up 100, which is like roll 4 more times.
Okay.
And you're like, okay, I guess we shall.
Anyway, Road Warrior is what we're getting.
Road Warrior is what we're getting, though.
reminder again that as you hear this, probably, unless you're listening early, which does sometimes happen, Wednesday this week is the Cellus Brewery Graphic Novel Club.
Oh, yeah.
I will be there to discuss some horror graphic novels, Me, You Love in the Dark, Nice House on the Lake, and Beneath the Trees Where No One Sees.
a true triumvirate of greatness.
Whatever.
Those are all really good graphic novels.
They are. And then next Saturday, not this coming Saturday, but the Saturday after, is our Halloween party for kids.
Yep.
From noon to 5, there will be treats. There will be free comics.
There'll be fun activities.
Like
you'll get to like draw a ghost or a monster or something like that. And
come in costume. If a kid comes in costume, they will get 15% off any one graphic novel in the All Ages section.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very fun.
Yep.
Will there be tricks?
There may be tricks.
Hey, you know. I forget, Randy. Is there an age suggestion on this? Like if you're 18, you're probably too old, right?
It's 16 and under.
I believe it's 16 and under.
Right. If you come in and you're 18, we hit you with sticks.
Yes. That's the trick.
That's the trick, I guess.
Yeah. I'm like, where's the Halloween sticks? Get him.
To be clear.
Now I have to
build... That person wasn't even here to participate in it.
We are not going to hit anyone with sticks on Halloween.
Or right, because it's the week before. Yeah. That's when we hit them. And to be clear, Randy is saying that, but I will be lurking in the shadows.
Dave's not even here on Saturday, so don't worry.
I'm coming up just for this one.
Dave's coming up with his... He's bringing his beaten stick.
At least he's supplying it.
In case you try and have fun Halloween activities and you're over 16... We'll be seeing you. We'll be seeing you again.
You're going to Krampus this Halloween?
I will drop the hammer on you.
All right. So
more threats than our usual.
Yeah,
a little bit. Sticks more. To hammers. Want to escalate it some more?
So there is game stuff to talk about. We got a Kickstarter from the Ninth Level Games, the guys who do Business Wizards and all those little fun games.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they do
these are little RPGs, not board games.
They're RPGs, and it's called the Polymorph System.
Okay.
And we got a starter set, a big box starter set for Venture Society, which is in the world of animals. The regions used to be at war with each other. The brave animals from each region united for peace and formed the Venture Society. So they basically travel around, dedicating to helping others and encouraging harmony with their fellow animals.
Sorry, did we say, is this an all-ages?
This is an all-ages, non-violent RPG focused on building communication, social, and emotional skills.
I think I remember reading about this in advance of it, and it sounded pretty cool.
It does sound very cool.
Like an adventure, but without all of the kill, kill, kill. Yes,
no murders. We got the Mass Effect board.
I know, right now, by the way, every D&D player listening to this is like, but the kill, kill, kill is what I'm there for. Yeah. But I'm like, but sometimes the adventure is pretty cool, too.
That's true.
Keep it in mind.
Or
I'll drop the hammer on you.
We'll beat you with this beating stick.
That's right. It's not just for Halloween anymore. It's how we keep order.
We got the Mass Effect board game, which is a co-op, story-driven kind of board game.
Yep.
I saw it had the Shadow Broker and stuff in it. Like I'm not going to say that's not like a super deep cut. That's a major plot line in it.
Right.
But I'm like... It was cool just to see that stuff because I hadn't thought about Mass Effect in a while. And as I'm looking at the aliens on the back and the gear and those
plots, looks like an entire loadout of like the original video game. So you had I can't remember the Krogan's name, but yeah. Like all those characters.
Johnny Krogan.
Johnny Krogan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's it.
There is Liana. Liara.
Yeah.
And Johnny Krogan.
And then there was the sniper guy.
Garrus. Not Garrus. Garrock. Yes.
Not Garrock.
All right, I can remember everybody except for the Krogan. Now it's going to bug me.
he has a simple, like, one word, one syllable.
Let's
like,
see. If I type
like
in
slag Krogan, or...
Yep. All right. We also got some board games. Box Top Pinball Haunted House. This is a... Simulates a haunted house pinball by flicking dice and rolling to victory, which is kind of fun.
Sounds fun. Yeah. It's a haunted house just in time for October.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yep. A game called Planta Nubo, where you create your own gardens in the sky to harvest oxygen in a solar punk world.
Huh?
This looks very cool. The design looks cool. It is a very pretty looking game.
That's cool.
We got a game called Undergrove. It's a mushroom game. You trade nutrients with fungi to grow new trees. People like mushroom games.
There's been a boom in mushroom-based stories and games in the last 10 years.
And this is co-designed by Mark Wooten, who did Thunderstone.
Huh? It's a solid pedigree.
And Elizabeth Hargrave, who did Wingspan and Wormspan.
Dang.
Fox Experiment. Sorry, not Wormspan.
Okay, but still, that's quite the pedigree.
It is. I'm very curious.
And what's the new game called?
That game is called Undergrove.
Undergrove, okay.
Very pretty looking game.
His name is Rex.
Rex. There you go.
Or not Rex.
What?
They all have like a is it a surname? Is that what it is? Or like the...
All right, well, Rex is what you call him, though.
His name is Rex.
Yeah. That is what... The wiki told me his name.
But then
is,
he said not Rex, and he got confused.
It's Erdnot Rex.
Erdnot Rex.
Oh.
I thought you said not Rex, and I'm like, what are you talking about?
That's what I heard, too.
Yeah.
Erdnot Rex.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Yeah. I was like, Nick told us the name, and he told us it wasn't the name.
Rex.
I'm very confused.
A.K.A. Johnny Krogan.
Johnny Krogan. a game here that has an 8.0 on BGG, which, by the way, that's with 128 ratings.
Yep.
That's very high.
It's very high.
That's like a 10 anywhere else.
What is the game?
It's called Wild Gardens.
Okay.
You are foraging for new food and friends, competing to cook delicious meals for the most discerning of guests. This looks super fun. The design is super cool. It's a very pretty game. It's got cool looking meeples. I'm very curious about this game.
That sounds cool.
And then we've got the Return of Risk Godstorm. That is the Greek myths Risk.
Yeah, this game goes back a little bit, like 10 or 15 years maybe originally,
yep.
But had been, what, out of print for ages, and this is like a new edition of it, or is it revised, or is it just back in print?
I think it's just back in print. It may have some revisions, but I believe it's just back in print.
But, you get Risk, but with swole gods and stuff.
We got the Sherlock Holmes Solitaire, for those of you who like one-player games.
Okay, very cool.
And the Star Trek version of Star Realms, the beloved game that Dave and I both really enjoy.
Yep, I always rave about this.
It's a great deck builder.
I know that this is pretty much a reskin of it, and it is not like we rebuilt it from the ground up just for Star Trek. But even so, even knowing that if I play a card, I'm going to be like, I know what Star Realms card this secretly is. It looked so beautifully done that I'm like, I might need to get this.
So I played this with a friend of mine because I got a copy of it from Gen Con.
Yep.
And she does not know Star Trek at all.
Oh, interesting.
But she knows Star Realms. So we're playing it, and she knows the cards.
Yeah.
But as I'm playing it, I'm actually seeing like what they've chosen to skin, and it's interesting to see what they've chosen to skin the things to.
Right, so like what becomes the arc.
If you are a Star Trek fan and a Star Realms fan, you will get a little bit extra out of this.
That sounds cool. I know that the four factions of Star Realms became Federation, Klingons, Romulans, and
the Dominion.
Dominion, yeah. Which sounds like a pretty good balance.
The Raiders, what are the ones you can
scouts
always buy?
Scouts or Raiders,
What are the ones you can always buy? They're not scouts, but
I know what you're talking about.
The Explorers.
Explorers, yeah.
The Explorers are Ferengi ships.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah, kind of a neutral ground.
Yep. So it's fun. It's a fun reskinning of it. Like I said, it doesn't bring anything new to the table, unfortunately. It's not like new mechanics, but it is a reskinned four-player Star Realms
version. Since Star Realms clearly drafted a lot on the kind of lore that Star Trek uses, you know, I'm like, I wonder if what is their... The Federation was based off of... What do they call it in the game?
The Federation.
They're literally the Federation. and then the other... There's dudes who seem like Klingon, and there's dudes who seem like Borg.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm like, it was already halfway there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyway, yeah, that's cool.
Some other RPGs we got. We got an indie RPG called In the Ashes, which is a it's a tabletop game you can play in a book. It says it's got a combination of tactical combat, decision-making, skill selection, equipment, all that stuff.
Okay.
You have action cards. It's an epic campaign.
But it is an RPG, or is it a board game?
It is an RPG.
Okay.
But it seems to be set on some mysterious island.
Okay.
So maybe it's lost, the RPG.
What's the name of this one?
Into the Ashes.
Into the Ashes.
And then we've got the G.I. Joe RPG. Finally, the source book that has the Dreadnoughts and the Ninjas in it.
Yeah.
Yep.
You two can pit bikers versus martial artists.
Indeed.
The age-old battle.
There's a couple source books for Vampire and Werewolf. Vampire is a Gehenna War, which is secret societies, all this kind of thing. And then Werewolf is called Shattered Nation, and it's about how the Guru have sort of fallen apart and is now they're vulnerable to attack.
Hmm. Okay.
So, yeah, some kind of new stuff for them. And, let's move on and talk about comics for the week. It is a lighter week for comics than the last couple, but there's some good stuff in there.
Do we want to, briefly, before we do that, just quick backtrack and say that Absolute Batman sold out?
Absolute Batman sold out.
Absolute Batman sold out, y'all. If you missed your shot, you'll never get another chance at it again, except right. when we do get some more printings in.
Right. There's the second printing they made us order before we saw it sold, so it's already spoken for and gone. The third printing is coming in November, and we're taking a special order for that. It's like November 27th. It's going to be after number two hits, unfortunately.
But suffice to say, it did turn out to be extremely buzzworthy. Yep. Bodes well. We've also, I think, all read most or all of the initial three Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman ones through previews or the physical copy. And there's promising stuff in every one of them. They're all pretty cool. So,
if you want copies, please let us know.
Yeah, let us know ahead of time and help us to help you.
All right, let's talk comics.
Yes.
This week we have another miniseries from Marvel's X-Line, Mystique. This is a miniseries, right?
I thought it was an ongoing, but sure.
I don't know. I thought the solo books, were, except for like Storm, were all miniseries.
Okay, so maybe.
But anyway, last we saw Mystique, she and Destiny had gotten married. Now she's being hunted by... what's his name? Maverick, who has apparently gone full bad guy now.
He's like a mercenary.
But he's like only being bad guy mercenary. Like in Wolverine Bloodhunt, he was bad guy mercenary.
Yeah,
you know, I have to vampires. Say, I don't know much about Maverick other than I glimpsed a few 90s comics that had him in it. But I kind of liked seeing him in here. I was like, I get the idea. He's a German mercenary?
Yeah, he's a German mercenary.
German mercenary, and...
There's some kind of kinetic absorption powers. Isn't that his powers?
Yeah, it was.
And he had the legacy virus.
Okay. I guess he got through that, though. Yeah. But now he has to deal with Mystique.
Yep. So he's hunting Mystique for somebody. She is she's also being hunted by the CIA. Nick Fury Jr., who is now not with S.H.I.E.L.D., but with the CIA, is hunting her.
There's an interesting convo between Nick Fury Sr., between dad Nick Fury and son Nick Fury, about how they do things a little differently. And there's a little bit of bitterness or like antagonism between them in there, which I thought was interesting and well handled. I think the big thing here is kind of like, do you like Mystique? But also Declan Shelvey as writer and artist on it is brings something interesting to the table.
Yep.
So if that sounds like it's up your alley, give it a shot.
My favorite read this week and maybe this month so far is the Moon Knight Fist of Khonshu #1. This is the new relaunch of Jed McKay's Moon Knight book.
It's like the 8th relaunch.
It's the 3rd relaunch.
All right. But here's the thing. It's like, I believe you and I in particular, Randy, would both say everyone has been good.
Yep.
McKay has had a unified vision, even though, basically, I think we all kind of know, these relaunches are to give the book a little bit of extra oomph.
It feels like, it doesn't feel like McKay's in charge of it. It feels like Marvel's like, hey, give us a reason to relaunch.
Right.
And he does. Like, there's kind a of reason like for this.
New directions and things like that, but it's rarely, you're never going to pick up one and be like, oh, they just threw away all the work he'd been doing. They're all continuations of what he'd been doing.
Yep.
And there's trades of his run that are good. And this was a good first issue. It's, it kind of, there's an investigation kind of going on related to him that kind of catches you up on where things are. And it interweaves with something he's doing in the present, which is kind of a cool, creepy idea of something that's a, well, his Midnight Mission area, it covers, does it kind of have, is it like its own borough or whatever of New York?
What, Midnight Mission?
Yeah, I forget.
Sort of its own, he's got a territory.
Right, but does he, like...
The whole night was his territory.
Has he run into Daredevil, by the way?
Not of yet.
Because that's what happens when something happens in Hell's Kitchen. I want a minor hero turf war rivalry. I don't want, an antagonistic thing. I just want a rivalry. The new thing that's going on that's a problem for Moon Knight is actually a cool idea.
Yep. I really like it's like, you know, drug dealer, which is very much a sort of 90s, 80s kind of issue, but with a sort of Marvel Universe twist, which I thought was kind of cool.
It is heightened in an interesting way.
I like this new villain.
And they're also keeping to the Moon Knight who's, you know, Warren Ellis, very much... He hit upon a good keynote once upon a time about 15 years ago when he did his version. When he said, when somebody was like, "What, Moon Knight, why are you wearing these bright silver, white, you know, like cowl and cape?" Mm-hmm. And he's like, "I like him to see me coming." And that's like, he's like the dude who's like, "I don't care if you know that I'm after you." He's like, "I wanted you to be afraid and to see it."
Also, his iteration of Mr. Knight continues on.
So that's another Warren Ellis continuation.
Yep.
But I think it's not his exclusive persona, right?
No, he'll do whatever he wants.
He kind of is probably going to cape it up and stuff too.
But it's a good look.
It's a good look. It is. For sure. Again, was that Declan Shelby who drew that back when?
I believe it was.
Partnered with him on that book. It's Declan Shelby Day.
There's
Declan Shelby Tuesday.
Crypt of Shadows is a Marvel's Halloween special.
Yep.
It's got four stories. One of them is by That Texas Blood's Chris Condon.
Right.
Steve Orlando is in here. Benjamin Percy, Jason Liu.
I saw that dude in there from the Werewolf by Night TV special.
Yeah, the weird...
Who was like the big bearded Viking looking dude with axes. I was like... I thought that guy might have gotten killed. So maybe this is just his comic incarnation, or maybe it's before that. But anyway.
That was a cool Scarlet Witch Vision story. Yep. There's some interesting pairings, like Namor
Man-Thing
and
Namor. That is interesting.
Kraven going after a Werewolf by Night.
That actually makes sense.
Yeah.
With the inclusion of one other character. I thought it was a fun little special.
It is, yeah. The little special. DC's big launch this week is Batman and Robin Year One.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
This is Mark Waid and Chris Samnee. Chris Samnee.
Pretty powerhouse creative team.
One of the best artists working in comics.
Yeah. And yet easily. Also a kind of very underappreciated artist.
Very much.
And he's not always like on like these big A-list projects, so like you may hear that name and be like, I don't even know who that is. But if you like artists that draw kind of like the Batman the Animated Series look, or like Darwin Cook did, he's at least he's in those circles. And he, in particular, I think is amazing with shadows. So when he's drawn like Gotham City and the Batmobile and like all of this stuff, super good at that. It's really amazing.
His Robin's great looking too. Like this is a really cool like early.
Yep.
It is right as Robin's become Batman's partner. They're going out the street for the first time. Yeah, it's fun.
As Batman notes, well, it's like there's the story involves Two-Face and kind of like it's not a death trap per se, but he's kind of like a death trap type experience. The first one for young Robin is in this issue, along with a new threat that, you know, having seen the Falcones and the Maronis and stuff like that since like 1986 endlessly, I was kind of happy to see a sort of crime boss type character who was a somebody new. Yes, and along with the heightened supervillains like Two-Face and stuff in there. So that one's worth checking out, I think.
We also have Batman Full Moon, or What If Batman Werewolf.
Right.
Yep.
Not if Batman became a werewolf, but this is Batman fighting a werewolf.
Doesn't he become a werewolf?
I don't think so.
I thought he did.
No. I mean, that might be happen later down the road.
Red Rain or whatever it was ages ago, Batman became a vampire.
Yeah.
But the solicit, at least, that I made the sign from for this indicated that there is just this, like, apex werewolf shredding Gotham.
Okay.
And it's, like, maybe potentially beyond him because it's like, at a like an uber power level. Now, Nick, you have actually read it, so... Yeah. And you're like, it's not, like, crazy, crazy powered. But this is kind of its own setting.
It's super powerful. I mean, it's powerful in the sense that, like, Killer Croc and all those other people who are pretty strong and powerful over him...
That it's more powerful than them?
A little bit, but not, like, crazy.
Okay.
But it's also a story that involves Kirk Langstrom and a few other kind of fun little notes. I thought it was a good... I like Batman up against the supernatural, so... Yeah,
it's like a little Halloween-appropriate Batman threat, if you...
And the cover is, I believe, Glow in the Dark.
Nice.
And then we've got Exorcism at 1600 Penn... Number one, this is a the first female president gets elected, and there's some kind of possession going on in her house, which is the White House.
So it's basically an exorcist story.
With pressures like the West Wing. of the politics and stuff like that.
I thought it was a really good first issue.
Really,
I really dug it. They did the possession in a way that I felt like it wasn't rushed. You got to know the characters a little bit. The art is interesting. I don't know. I thought this was a particularly good first issue. That kind of takes a possession story and puts it in a new location to make it a little bit more unique.
Right. I feel like possession stories tend to, I'm not quite sure why, they tend to be either sort of middle class or upper middle class people who get it, but you usually don't get the uppermost echelons.
Yep. Yeah. Some notable second issue this week, Avengers Assemble number 2, which you can sell from the cover, sees the Avengers team facing off against the Red Ghost in an interesting way. I really like this issue. I really like what they're doing with these Avengers.
For people who know the old FF villain Red Ghost,
yep.
He has always had these three mutated apes that got their powers from like cosmic radiation, same as the Fantastic Four did. And this has a weird thing where there's like a city being haunted by... It's more like his powers, ghostliness, but with these apes. So there's like these spectral apes running around, which is a cool, weird premise. I like the kind of offbeat nature of it, and yet rooted in Marvel lore.
There's a great bit in here, by the way, where they're like they're talking about these are all like veteran Avengers. It's the team. This issue is like Cap and Hawkeye have worked together forever, alongside Hercules, who's of course been an Avenger forever, and then new guy Night Thrasher, who is like providing like tactical support. But there's a bit where they like they find the Red Ghost, and Hawkeye's like he's invisible, right? Can he still see? And then he does something cool, and he's like, "Sorry, I couldn't tell you." He might have picked up on it.
Oh, interesting!
It was a cool moment.
There's actually like a bunch of sort of interesting moments in the issue.
Yeah.
Whether it's I think Randy, you and I, and maybe Nick too, have a fondness for the jacket era of the Avengers from the 1990s. That kind of gets reactivated here. So you see the Avengers wearing jackets again.
Yep.
And also it seems like each issue focuses on having some downtime with the characters. So there's another one where some of the characters are sitting around watching kind of bad action movies. And in this case, it's a bad Arnold Schwarzenegger, Simon Williams, a.k.a. Wonder Man, movie, which is just a nice fun bit of very Avengers. This is the kind of bad movies you watch in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, which I do love. Second issue of Star Wars Battle of Jakku Insurgency Rising. That was pretty popular. We've got a second printing coming in number 1.
Oh, wow.
People seem to be looking for it.
It is kind of part of the new direction, which is all post-Return of the Jedi stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Final issue of Destro, which I think we all enjoyed.
Yeah there's some fun stuff. Destro gets to get physical in this and drop a beat down.
Yep.
There's some cool reversals of fortune, you know, troops battling it out. Somebody's got the upper hand. Oh, somebody else has some clever responses to it. And they kind of keep you guessing as to exactly how it's going
to
play out.
Tomax and Zaymot get to be cool.
Yep.
Tomax and Zaymot get to be cool, but they also get to find, we get to confirm that, like on the cartoon, if you hit one, you hit the other one too.
Destro's reaction to that is pretty great.
Yeah.
issue 10 of Ultimate Spider-Man, which is delving into the sort of conspiracy stuff. It's heavily focused on Ben Urich and J. Jonah Jameson, which is kind of cool.
That was a fun issue.
Yep. Uncanny X-Men number 4, which is the penultimate issue of the first arc for Gail Simone. Mm-hmm. Thought this was a pretty solid issue.
It was.
And then Bloodhunters number 3 is out this week. Anything else on y'all's reading list?
We should always do the all-in stuff for DC.
I forgot Action Comics, which is weekly now.
Right, so the second issue of Mark Waid's Action Comics hits this week. This is the one that had Superman going into the Phantom Zone last week. Things have been changing in it, and there have been some recent issues with it. And he's like, I need to go on a scouting mission into the Phantom Zone, and this is kind of what happens next. But what else do we have from All In? There's All In
Catwoman,
which I think you enjoyed, Nick, and I also thought that her costume and the art in general looked quite good.
Yeah, and this is written by, is it Torin Grumbeck, who was
Jason
Aaron's writing partner for Thor.
Right.
Yep. And then we've got Titans.
There's Titans, which kind of ties right into the stuff that was going on where they are now part of the broader Justice League, which operates out of a watchtower from the All-In special. It is clear that they are doing Justice League Unlimited. Everybody is kind of a member of the Justice League if you make clearance, and can operate out of the tower. But this issue focuses on, like, you know, are they also their own standalone team? Yes, they are, and how that all works. There's a Green Lantern All In.
Right.
That's issue 16.
That's kind of leading out of the Green Lantern special that was last week.
Right. And let's see, what else? I think that's everything for All In.
Yeah.
There's the final issue of Tom Taylor's very well-liked Nightwing run.
There's also the Dark Knights of Steel, the All-Winter
Particularly
good.
Yep.
And that's interesting because, like, Tom Taylor invented the Dark Knights of Steel setting, but this has been written by somebody else with, I think, backups by Tom Taylor. Yep. This is the kind of, like, icy winter setting. You know, if it were Game of Thrones, this would be all this stuff with the wildlings and all that.
But I like that we actually got a reveal as to why it's all white and snowy.
Right, right. I was flipping through it. I am behind on this, but I kind of browsed through it, and I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And this one has continued to focus also on, like, Slade, right?
Deathstroke. And then a young boy
Of mysterious,
who's supposed to save nature. Everything. But did we also mention Wolverine number 2?
Nope. Oh, Wolverine number 2. Yeah,
so big. The second issue of Solid and Ahmed's Wolverine. This one, he's still in the Canadian Outback, and when you're in the Canadian Outback, you run into
the Wendigo.
A Wendigo.
It happens.
We've
all been there.
I've always thought of that because my first encounter with it was through, I think, Claremont. Or no, he didn't do the first one. It showed up in Hulk originally.
Yep.
But Claremont's take on it when he was in X-Men way back when was very horror-based.
Yeah.
They really leaned into that, and it was like, oh, I feel like I should be scared to when this thing shows up because it's like a cannibal monster.
I was a fan of the Mignola's portrayal of it in BPRD.
Oh, I can't quite remember.
It was very horror. Touched as well, but that was sort of where I kind of delved into it, other than the Marvel Universe.
This is a rematch for Wolverine. Yep. That's from his first appearance.
But this is a little bit turned on its head. It's an interesting confrontation between the two characters.
Wolverine yells out, Wolverine!
Right, and the Wendigo is actually working for Weapon H and is leading Alpha Flight.
Yes.
We just made that up. It's not a true thing.
No.
You should probably read it. Don't trust us on anything, the rest of this, including everything else in this podcast.
All right, that's everything?
Yes.
That's it?
All right, let's take a break, and we're going to watch a couple trailers and talk about some news. You may remember a thing we said a few minutes ago.
Seconds ago, maybe even.
No, for Dave. For us, it was minutes ago.
Oh, right.
So we're going to break the illusion, the fourth wall of the podcast here.
Yes.
Sometimes when we say a thing and then we take a break, so we usually go right back to it. Sometimes time passes and we go out to, say, put out the diamond and our stuff that had just arrived.
Right. We've been unloading boxes between segments.
For you, it has been mere seconds. For us, 5 days.
An eternity. Yes.
5 years later.
And in that time, we realized, oh, we actually missed mentioning a few things with this week's comics.
Yes, we did.
So before we get to the one trailer I think we're going to talk about, we're going to sneak them in.
Yes, we're going to talk about some comics we missed.
Don't panic.
So I want to first mention, Junji Ito has a new, always around Halloween, Viz puts out a Junji Ito book. This time it is called Uncanny, The Origins of Fear, which has some illustrations, but is mostly a bio of Junji Ito and how he became such a weird dude.
Oh.
And then some of, like, where some of his weird horror ideas come from. So there's some behind-the-scenes
That's
stuff.
Cool.
It's a really cool, like, if you're a Junji Ito fan, you're going to want this.
All I know about him is what I've seen through weird little online memes and TikToks and stuff like that, which suggests that he himself is a kind of fun-loving dude and fairly chill.
He's a prankster god.
He just makes creepy, supremely creepy manga.
Dave, you have the other stack.
Yeah, let's quick mention a couple things that came back in stock. So we got a new printing of the first issue of just X-Men.
Yep.
That's Jed McKay's.
Yep, which means we now have all four issues.
Book. That's Cyclops' team. It's the one set in Alaska. It's good stuff. We like it.
It is my favorite of the X-Men relaunch.
It's up there. It's up there. I have to think about it to figure out where it lands in my pantheon, but
Dave,
it's good.
I have lists at all times of my favorite things.
Yeah, I bet you do. and then the other restock we have is the first issue of Aliens vs. Avengers.
Yep.
Which that was another quick sellout, and it's a kind of a weird book because it's bi-monthly or it's, once every 2 months,
something like that. Yeah.
So the second issue hasn't hit yet. You got time. You can get it on the ground floor still. But yeah, this was a cool first issue from Jonathan Hickman, quite the name to be putting on a licensed project. But you know, Hickman's been our He's written what I think is our best-selling comic of the last year, Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yep.
Best-selling ongoing, anyway.
Yep.
It's that mind turned to Aliens versus Avengers. So indeed. Check those out. And then I've got two graphic novels to mention, both in the horror genre. One is the first volume of The Deviant. That's from James Tinian, one of our favorite horror writers. And we've talked about this in single-issue format any number of times. It is a creepy, multi-generational serial killer story with a serial killer who appears in a Santa costume. And, But the framing device about a young comic artist wanting to do a historical comic about it and interviewing the suspect in prison, and then there being questions about like a new series of killings and lots of suspects and things like that becomes really interesting. Great dialogue, very suspenseful. Some really unnerving scenes in this. But yeah, The Deviant, I think we'd all recommend this, right?
Oh yeah, I've
read the first issue.
Nick hasn't read it enough to fully recommend it.
Really?
No.
Oh wow.
We sold out of the second issue and I've just
fell behind.
Well, I know you enjoyed revisiting or getting to Nice House on the Lake, also from James Tinian recently. So
I believe Dave and I have been keeping up with this and really enjoying
every issue lately has been just a banger.
Yep.
And then lastly, they do those. There's a guy, I guess is it Gao Tanabe?
Yes.
It looks like is a adapts H.P. Lovecraft stuff to manga, and he's done a bunch of things like Dunwich Horror?
Innsmouth.
Innsmouth, Shadow Over Innsmouth is one. Mountains of Madness is another. And now he's adapting like kind of the granddaddy of the lore stories, The Call of Cthulhu. So I was just looking at this before we started this with Nick, and I was like, aside from the fact that it opens with a bunch of beautiful color book plates of creepy Lovecraftian stuff, this is a full adaptation of the short story or novella, The Call of Cthulhu, that set the whole thing in motion.
Yeah, was it Mountains of Madness? Is a big hardcover one they've done, and it was gorgeous.
Yeah, there's some stuff in here. His depiction of Cthulhu himself, of the island Relia, of the like everything in it
it's
is really
just
amazing.
So intricate and detailed and just creepy as hell.
He does that duotoned or multiple shades, black and white. And it's incredibly elaborate, and also pretty much all of these are very faithful to the stories. You know, there's incidental dialogue and maybe an occasional incident here and there, but otherwise they're very faithful to it. So you're not gonna get that in too many places. One of the best Lovecraft comics you'll find.
Yeah. All right.
I think that's it.
Now on to news and trailers.
Yes.
So we talked about Lanterns, the HBO Max series, or I guess just Max, or just HBO. I don't know.
It's Max.
Zaslav keeps changing things. It currently says at HBO.
Awesome.
So,
okay. Oh my God.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, besides, we should. I won't go on a tangent about the man who destroyed a perfectly good brand for no reason.
Yep.
But there is a new.
But listen to previous podcasts for Randy's thoughts on the matter.
And future podcasts.
And future podcasts.
And you know what? This podcast. Fuck that
stuff. Zasloff, more like Asloff.
Anyway, they're doing 8 episodes. It's going to be HBO in. It's going to be a.
This is the Green Lantern thing?
It's called Lanterns.
Okay.
And it is going to be a. Like a street level thing. It seems like a word
it's
like
on Earth.
They're saying it's like True Detective style lanterns. I don't know how to feel about it. I still don't. But there are lanterns that they've cast.
The casting has been good, right?
As a sort of older Hal Jordan, we've got Kyle Chandler, a.k.a. Coach from Friday Night Lights.
Okay.
And the guy from the Godzilla movies.
Do we think this is a good thing?
That's a good thing. Okay. He's perfect for it. Yeah. In fact, he's going to make Hal considerably less of a douchebag than Hal should be.
Nice.
Which is good. But they've cast their John Stewart, and it is a guy named Aaron Pierre. Nick, do you know this guy?
You usually know
actors better than I do, and I'm like, I don't recognize this guy.
Let's see.
I was like, I don't know what he's been in. No idea.
Well, Nick looks that up. I will say that the street level lanterns is a weird thing to me. Unless it's like, well, we found an alien body here, and the lanterns are investigating it on Earth. But like, these guys need to be like flying around in space.
Dave and I have seen him in Night Shyamalan's Old.
Yes.
And then
Who was he in Old?
Mid-sized sedan.
Was he the rapper?
He was.
Okay. Wait, his name is Mid-sized Sedan?
He's a rapper.
Still.
It's Shyamalan, Rainey. But yes, that is a fair reaction. I just watched the pitch meeting for it the other day, and much fun was made of that.
And then he's in the new Netflix movie that's gotten pretty good reviews, yeah. If I'm not mistaken, the Rebel Ridge, which yeah. I still want to watch.
Oh, yeah, I was curious about that.
Yep. Then he was on Krypton, playing Dev M.
Oh, always. He brought Dev M to life better than any other Dev M portrayer.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Portrayer of Dev M.
Dave, roughly how much of Krypton would you say you and I have watched?
Less than 100%.
Yeah. More than one episode between the two of us?
No.
Less than one episode.
Less than one episode.
Yeah. But I'm sure...
I guess what I'm saying is I'm looking forward to seeing Dev M.
Yes, for sure. At any rate, I bet
will be a good bit of casting. Yeah. He's a good actor.
Yep.
I want to put all my faith in James Gunn, but I'm just like, I got to see some proof before I can get there.
Today he released the picture. We got Crypto.
That's a picture.
It's a picture. It's a good picture.
Yep.
I know, but Crypto is going to be in it.
Good PR.
Yep.
Actually, I'm not a fan of Crypto in Superman lore for
Shut
the most
up.
Part.
David's dogs.
I like Crypto's dogs, but if you ask me all the great stories that Crypto has been in, and the only one I can think of is
the one where he dies.
I mean, Nick, can you correct me and tell me a great Crypto story?
I believe David ran on this. I love the idea that Crypto's in this.
He's well in the young Clark and...
story that only Nick remembers because it doesn't really exist.
I have seen stories with him where he's... I like him.
I will say, I'm with Nick on this. I actually think it's a very promising thing. I like Crypto in theory, but I'm also with Dave in that I don't think there's been a good Crypto story.
Right. I'm not asking for John Wick's enemies to come in and kill Crypto necessarily.
No, please don't.
But to me, it's not an immediate sign that this is good.
Crypto dying in Alan Moore's Whatever Happened to the Man Tomorrow, spoilers for a 30-year-old story, that messed me up. It still does. I don't like that.
Does he do something like... Does he take...
He takes on the Kryptonite Man and basically sacrifices himself.
Right, right.
And it's the saddest thing ever.
Like, you hear his howl, I think.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know what, Alan Moore? Fuck you.
Yeah.
For making me live through that.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
But also, it's a good story.
It is. It is. But the dog shouldn't die.
Right. Alan Moore is often that guy.
He is that guy.
He's often that guy.
Yep.
He'll kill a dog.
He will.
In a second.
Yep.
In a second.
Without a second thought.
And we'll the world will look up at him and say, save the dog, and he'll say no. the Green Lantern thing is one of the weirder ones to me.
It is to me too.
I am like always like honestly desperate for Green Lantern material. I like Green Lantern conceptually. I occasionally like the comics, but I feel like 15% of the time, maybe less, I get a story I like.
Yeah.
And I need a better track record. I would love to have a badass Green Lantern movie. Or show.
Yeah.
I'm just worried.
I am also worried.
But the casting is good, so let's give him this day.
Speaking of casting,
yep.
Henry Cavill, who you may know is famously not Superman anymore.
Right.
Some people are very upset about that. They all have blogs and YouTube shows.
People like the Cavill, though, right?
Yeah, they do. I like Cavill as well.
Is he the Witcher Man?
He was the Witcher Man, and then they got mad. People are mad about that, too, Dave.
Yep. This guy,
keeps getting fired, and fanboys keep getting mad about it.
All the guys with hetero crushes on him are continually disappointed to see his sexy muscles.
They don't know how to deal with their feelings, so they venture into the internet and say awful things.
I think that's what we're
going to have to enjoy him. He is also headlining Highlander, the remake.
Right.
Is he also still doing the Warhammer movie?
He's in development for a bunch of stuff. The Warhammer show. And the latest thing, he has been cast in Voltron, the live-action Voltron for Amazon, which, by the way, don't make a live-action Voltron.
Yeah, that last cartoon was pretty good.
And the last cartoon's about to go off Netflix.
Yeah.
Like, just keep the good cartoon on. Don't make a new live-action version.
Brandon, why would you think...
Dumb rights issues, Nick.
Yeah, they're going to...
I mean, they made it. I don't understand it. And also, not only is it about to go off Netflix... It doesn't exist on DVD and Blu-ray. Like that, like you can't get all of it.
You think, Randy, in like 10 years or so, they'll be really strip mining IPs, and they'll be like, it's a gritty new take on Wacky Racers,
yes,
or Brave Star from the 80s.
100%. What about what if the Silverhawks were a band of marauding mercenaries?
Do like a dark Wacky?
They
Racers?
Did in the comics, but yes, I'm talking did. Big budget. Yeah, I'm talking the real deal.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, how about a dark take on Freakazoid? It could happen.
Yeah, what if Freakazoid was a murderer?
Probably wasn't at his best in a animation form. What you really need is the return of Ezra Miller.
Yes.
As Freakazoid.
He's live action.
Come back.
Yes, he never wears the costume. He just calls himself... He writes Freakazoid and scrawled graffiti on the bodies of his victims.
That's feces.
That's feces.
It's a dark version of Animaniacs.
Yeah, yes. A dark version of Animaniacs.
Yakko, Wacko, and our illusionary sister Dot, who's actually just our psychosis.
Right. She died when we were young, and we've never been able to make peace with it.
Yes, and that's why we killed Dr. Scratch and Sniff. And drank his blood.
Nah. anyway, but a little bit of bitterness about IP mining there. You know, it's overall probably making Voltron as harmless.
Sure.
I'm not too worried about the IP being hurt.
It's not going to happen.
But just...
He signed on, like, four different things.
Right.
One of these might happen.
Two of them got to go. Three of them got to go.
He's just collecting options and checks. And good for him.
I think the Highlander thing is actually filming, so that's going
to
happen.
I have a Henry Cavill question for you, to interrupt this briefly. Is he a good actor?
I like him.
Is he just a good action actor?
He is good in Mission Impossible.
Right.
He seems like a nice person.
Yeah. Not exactly a ringing endorsement. I was wondering, because, you know, there are people like, who's the wrestler dude who, he was in Blade Runner 2049.
Dave Bautista.
And I'm like, okay, this guy I think has some real acting chops. And maybe Cavill has too, and just hasn't gotten his opportunity.
Unfortunately, has been sort of typecast into certain things that he's probably
he may be very well enjoying himself.
He was great in Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah,
he was fantastic.
He's an extremely charismatic actor.
Yeah.
Okay.
And was he in the Gemini Warfare thing? Was that him?
Yeah. He was.
He was good in that too.
Okay.
Yeah. He's good at playing a roguish British gentleman.
All right. I'll allow it.
A maniacal CIA man.
It's true.
That's our two roles.
I wish I could be a maniacal CIA.
He's not so good at playing Superman.
He was okay. I think he was fine as Superman.
He might have been okay. It's hard to tell.
Just kind of like pushed that.
It's hard to tell.
He did a good job.
We'll see how he handles being an immortal Scotsman. Is that one?
Sure. Immortal Scotsman or one of the Emperor's legions in Warhammer 40K.
Yep. He's not a moral Scotsman, is he? Oh, yes, he is. Connor McLeod. That's right. And the actual Scotsman in the movie played a Spaniard.
Yes.
With a Scottish accent.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, Highlander is a ridiculous movie that I love.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Do you like the second one?
No. God, no. What second one? There's been no other movies. There's been the one. Okay, on to non-trailer news. They're doing a sequel to Ready or Not.
I don't know how you do that sequel.
Let's quick remind people, Ready or Not's premise. And
A woman gets married
into a family that
makes like board games and stuff. And then discovers that they have a like
a
homicidal hide-and-seek thing that they do.
She thinks she's just going to some sort of meet the family post-wedding sort of tradition with the family of like, we're going to actually play a board game or something like that. And instead they try and like hunt and kill her.
She basically chooses from a deck of cards that it could be any game. And if you happen to choose hide and seek, you get the death game.
Samara Weaving is going to be in it again.
I feel like you were trying to defend the honor of the family. They're like, they don't kill every single person.
Sure, they don't.
It's just like you might pull the death game.
So the people, the production company that made this, they also made like the Scream sequels. Yeah.
Everyone's returning.
But it's in development. We usually don't talk about stuff in development like this, but I'm excited about the idea. I don't know how you do it.
I've got an idea for it.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't even like this movie that much.
Okay, yep.
It's okay.
Yep.
She having survived the kind of final girled it through that first one, finds out that they're part of a broader ring of people who do this, who are part of this cult and sacrifice, and she is in some way involved. Maybe even let's call them FBI, but it could be some special agency or something like that. Is like, hey, we want you to advise on this, or maybe even infiltrate it and help us expose them. And then he's like, oh, but what if the FBI is in on the cult, too, and they're trying to...
Maybe.
You know, I'm like, I think there's ways you could do it.
Technically,
you can't just do It Happens Again.
Well, and I think she inherits the company.
Okay.
Because she did get married.
Do you think she's going to be like, you know what, the death trap thing was fun?
Well, I mean...
Let's do it again.
Satan, or whoever it was, kind of gave her the nod. Like, I don't know.
Is that how it ends?
Yeah.
There's like, do you actually see like a demonic? There's like a demonic
thing, like that. Yeah, at the towards the end, I believe.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, you know, I feel like writers could potentially pull this one out.
Yeah.
Now, the vibe of the first one was the whole, oh, we didn't know what was coming, and then well, I guess if you've watched the trailer. But the slow dawning realization of it, and her playing Die Hard in a mansion while she's being hunted. And you kind of can't just immediately do that again. So they are going to have to figure out some stuff.
I think the idea of her like running the company and then somehow getting involved in it, like, and having to be like trying to undo the Satan Pact or something is probably the way to go. Anyway,
you
know, I've liked everything these guys have done.
Yeah,
I'm excited about it. I like Samara Weaving quite a bit.
Abigail was great. So their track record is pretty good.
Yeah.
Abigail was them too?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do they mainly do stories about people trapped in mansions with insane people?
You know what? If you got your brand.
So, okay. Is there like...
I guess Scream could be... There's nobody in Scream was trapped in a mansion. They were trapped in a theater.
Sometimes.
They were trapped in a theater.
They're also trapped in a bodega.
And they were trapped in a bodega and a Subway. Oh, shit.
Yeah. We may have figured out their formula.
Their next movie is going to be Trapped in the Closet, the adaptation of...
finally. The horror adaptation.
I mean, it is a horror adaptation. And then finally... A new trailer for a horror movie called The Monkey, which is based on a Stephen King story from Skeleton Crew that I have read, Nick has read.
Short
Nick
story.
Yeah. I had to remind myself, because it's been a long time since I've read Skeleton
Crew. I remember being
Crew.
Creepy, and it's on the cover. The monkey was on the cover of Skeleton Crew.
Yeah. How do you quick sum up the premise without giving anything away?
A little monkey drummer.
Yeah, one of those little old-time
toys.
And
every time he hits the drum, somebody dies.
So the story, the book, or the story was... Two brothers, when their father dies, they find a toy monkey amongst his things, and once it's unleashed, like, murders start to happen. And I think they...
The monkey's not killing. He just does his little drummy thing and people die?
I think it's, like, kind of a Final Destination, like, things kind of avalanche into people dying.
Not Dave, one where you don't. This isn't going to culminate in them punching the toy monkey.
Don't defend the monkey, Dave. He knows what he's doing.
It's sort of a. I don't know if it's like a monkey's paw.
My client is a drummer. He plays a drum as one would expect a drummer to do. If by chance a person should die when he strikes the drum, well, is that on him or is that on the drum?
He's a murder monkey, you son of a bitch, and you know it.
This trailer looks a little crazy.
Yes, I ordered the murder monkey.
Anyway, is from the director of Long Legs.
Osgood Perkins.
It has that's the sort of spooky, weird...
That is probably the big thing, because Long Legs was a huge success story, even though it sucked.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
This trailer looks more torturific than I want.
Did you say torturific? This,
yeah. There's a lot of people like flames, their heads on fire.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Right.
So the lead cast is Theo James, who was the lead in the Netflix adaptation of Gentleman. He was also been in a bunch of other stuff.
I do like him. He's a good British
man. He plays one of the brothers. The other brother is played by Elijah Wood.
Okay, I like Elijah Wood.
And then somehow Tatiana Maslany is in there.
Sure, like all those people. They're going to be in a movie I don't like. That's fine.
This has the potential to do well, I think, because Osgood Perkins is having his moment.
Yep.
A Stephen King adaptation adds a little bit of extra spotlight on it. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad.
Yep.
But I think things have been a bit better lately, broadly, and sometimes great.
Yep.
Flanagan's thing is probably going to be great.
That's what Flanagan does with Dark Tower.
Yep, that's the one.
Yep.
Anyway, that's the thing that's happening.
That's the thing that's happening. All right.
Are we excited at all?
No.
Nick, are you excited at all?
I mean, I think it looks, like, fun. I mean, literally, I just watched Long Legs yesterday.
Right, and you enjoyed Long Legs?
Yes.
It's not an amazing movie to you, but you enjoyed it.
No, there was enough in it, and the aesthetics were interesting. I thought Nicolas Cage got to be Nicolas Cage.
Compared to the baseline the story has established, that means you loved it.
Sure.
Because the baseline the story is established between Dave and Serena is the worst movie they've seen in theaters this year.
That's true. That's
accurate. Really? The worst movie you've seen in theaters this year?
I haven't seen a ton, but yet generally, you know, when I go to see most movies in the theater, I have some sense of whether I'm going to like it or not. And
like
I
see
I don't,
something with your sister that was worse?
Like I got dragged to or something?
Yeah.
No. I've most of the movie that I think I've seen in the theater, I've liked pretty well.
All right, let's take a break, and then we'll talk about Long Legs and also some other horror movies and a horror thing. All right, so we got some horror movies that I watched a horror movie, Nick's watched a few. But Dave, first, tell us about your experience with Scaring.
Yeah, I had a horror movie or a horror experience in the haunted house style.
Yes.
We talk about this, I think, most years. This is Scare for a Cure. The reason it's called that is because it's an all-volunteer operation, and they donate all their profits to breast cancer research. And it's a haunted house kind of experience out in Manor that usually has a bit more interactivity, a little bit of physical activity, like you're going to crawl through some tunnels. You're notably going to, and everybody there knows the deal, you're notably going to get blood on you.
Yes, get blood on you.
Get blood on you.
You're going to be doused.
Yeah, it's cool because, you know how, what was the movie we were just talking about where that girl Final Girls it?
Ready or Not.
Ready or Not. You will look like the girl at the end of Ready or Not.
Yes, you will.
Not? Ready or Not. And it's very fun. Yep. You'll know the deal, so just you wash your clothes and it's fine. they always put on a good show, and there's always a neat story to it, and this year was no exception. I felt like I didn't quite know what it was going to be, and it wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. But the premise of it is, and this is like roughly, I'm going to say, 45 minutes to an hour experience.
Yep.
You go in with a group of six people, and in this case, you, like a regular haunted house, you're kind of shepherded from one room to the next. Mm-hmm. But there's a little bit more story in you. You know, you're pausing here and there to get more story or interact with somebody. And it was supposed to be a book, like a library during a Celtic festival, and you were supposed to have some fun and games and meet the leprechaun and go on a treasure hunt, what do you call those things?
Scavenger hunt.
Scavenger hunt. Yeah. Thank you. I just couldn't say the words. And but in fact, the place has been taken over by like evil fae, you know, like from like Celtic legend.
Yep.
And like the Wild Hunt and stuff like that is there. Yep. And they are like killing people and stuff. But through a bit of magic, you are able to actually escape along with one of the librarians, who is sort of your guide through most of it, into some of the books. And so many of the rooms are themed around you, like you are entering Don Quixote or Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde or Alice in Wonderland, and they're all like nightmare versions of themselves. Mm-hmm. So like one of the first ones we did was, I think they probably just called it like King Arthur or whatever, not Le Mort d'Arthur, but that's what it was. And we help Lancelot, and he defeats a dragon, and of course when he goes up and like drives his sword into it, we are sprayed with a gout of like yellow ichor. It was amazing. One of the first big experiences with blood and guts. The kind of neat thing is that as we're kind of making our way through these, we become aware that the fae are chasing us through them. So very often we interact with like, you know, sort of sometimes more, sometimes less distorted versions of the book characters. But then, like, when we were talking, we were in Don Quixote land.
Yep.
We met his assistant, Squire Sancho Panza. Yep. And Sancho Panza turned out to be secret fae in disguise.
Oh.
Like, somebody knocks off his hat and reveals the pointy ears, and he's like, and he, like, you know, like, you know, tries to attack us and all of this stuff. And we, I know that, I think somebody got, like, knocked into the windmill, and the blood sprayed again. It's always, by the way, I should say, every once in a while, like, we were at one point holding a severed head. We knew we had to collect some items, and a head was one of them.
Uh-huh.
And when our guide picked it up, they always do stuff like this, kind of tongue-in-cheek. It's dripping blood. Yeah. And he's, like, flinging it around. It's like, where do we go next? And he swoops the head around, and so, like, it's blood flecks all over us. Very fun, ridiculous. And it's, like, light scary, you know, but you do get chases and surprises, and that's cool. Some of the more interesting ones that we ran into, the time machine, was very cool. I got the, some sort of, Sands of Time from there. That was one of the items that we had to get. We were chased by, like, Morlocks from it, and it's cool because they, like, started tunneling from, like, under walls and things like that. It was very awesome.
Yep.
In the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, where my brother he got, as occasionally happens as part of the story, you get, somebody will get secretly taken.
I was going to ask him to get kidnapped.
And he got taken, and so when we got into the room, we were like, where's Matt? And then we see that he's been tied up, and he's like at the tea party, all in ropes, and is forced to participate. That's and this, awesome. The Alice who was going around serving people tea had like a giant special effects-y, super toothy, spiky grin. We made our way out through that one after we, there's like a sort of a little riddle to guide us by going through a tunnel, but this was no ordinary tunnel. It was meant to be the corpse of the caterpillar, and we were going through its body. let's see. One of the other coolest things in it is that because there was all this sort of Celtic lore and fae lore, even though it was also horror too, is there a room where we met the Green Man. Mm-hmm. And it was like, they're easily the coolest special effect in it. Floor to ceiling, there was like a wall that was like all covered with ivy and plants and stuff like that, and it had a really amazing rendition of his face that moved, and when it, like, the eyes moved and the mouth moved when he spoke. And they're clearly not like pre-recorded, because there was an actor back there who would respond to our specific reactions and stuff.
Whatever dumb things you said.
Whatever dumb things, and there were some dumb things. But anyway, like, I always recommend this. You know, the kind of funny thing is when I notice something sometimes when I first get going on these, which is I'm like, this is not like the immediate production value of like a commercial haunted house. And sometimes, like in the first few rooms, I'm like, oh, these are kind of a little spare. Like the special, I'm like you know, they must have had a lower budget this year or not made as much. It's not quite as strong as I thought. But usually once I get a few rooms in, it's almost like your imagination starts to take hold. And I also think they do save up some of their better stuff for later, for sure. And then you're like kind of you're in the moment and really having fun with it. And like I always love it. I know that there was like an actual tragic incident this year. It was clear in the videotape you watch before you go in. Not an incident in the actual night, but the guy who was the director of it, his son passed away.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know specifics, but it happened in the middle of their production and everything. So he was very thankful to the co-directors who kind of took over and stepped up. But, you know, that might have actually explained a little bit of the sparser detail early on. But I don't even really say it as too much of a criticism, because the experience was another super fun one. I got to do the thing where, like, everybody is putting their items in at the end to, like, complete a spell and ritual and try and dispel the Wild Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And the Wild Hunt is like, he's like, if you join me, you can have immortality. And I'm, like, doing the thing I occasionally have done. I'm like, he's talking sense. Let's hear him
Dave
out.
Dave occasionally does. Dave says occasionally does. I've been to Dave. I've been to Scare with Dave, I believe, 4 times. Every single time, Dave starts bargaining with the bad guy at the end.
You know what? If this were a movie, I'd be the one making it better.
Uh-huh.
Because you know there has to be a person who hides that they get bitten by the zombie or whatever, and I'm that guy. Yep. I'm that guy.
Every time, there's like he's like, wait, they're talking sense.
My group was yelling at me, and I was not listening to them. I was listening to the Master of the Wild
Hunt. You just got to go through with it.
So here's the thing. I think I could have. There was a chant we were supposed to shout. In fact, by the way, I think we kind of mumbled it. We had forgotten part of what the chant was at that point. And I think the huntsman kind of like had to say, like, have you forgotten already? And then I think he kind of did the, was it not something like it? He kind of had to oomph us through it.
Yeah.
But there was another, he's like, or you can say, you know, like, let me live forever and hold your object, you know, your talisman aloft. And he's like, and I'll grant you immortality. So look, I had a real shot at immortality. And I believe if I had done it, they would have had to have some story element that would allow for
it. I'm sure.
Probably spray us all in blood, which happens no matter what you do in this. But anyway, very good time. Recommended as always. Mm-hmm. If it's probably too booked this year to get in, but check it out next year. And they also do their quest night in spring, yep, where you can go out. We did this last year, Randy.
I'm all about the quest night.
Quest night.
I think I want to go.
You get hours of Dungeons and Dragons kind of LARPing and rolling giant foam dice and facing monsters. And I also like quests that are roleplay quests and stuff like that. And it is silly fun and cool fun. And you get to choose your class and stuff.
Yeah, Nick, you should go this year. That way we can take the whole staff.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What else were you talking about?
All right. So I watched a movie. I watched Pearl.
Oh, right.
By Ty West. I am not a Ty West fan. I watched X, and I believe on the spectrum here, Nick loves it.
Yep.
Dave hates it.
Yes.
And I am in the middle.
Okay.
Which means I hated it a little bit.
Yep. And I've seen, like, two or three other films from him, and enough to say, like, there actually are moments and things that I like in, like, The Innkeepers or House of the Devil,
yeah,
I think, and stuff like that. Like, there's, I can find scenes, but in our spectrum, hate.
Yes. What I liked about X was the look of it. Like, it had, he has a look that I really like.
Yeah, his level of craft, his cinematography, his vision is pretty good.
Yeah. But the movie,
what was the setting in this?
It was the farm.
'30s or something.
So this is 1919.
Okay.
And this is the farmhouse that will eventually become the farmhouse where X takes place. And I couldn't figure out exactly who Pearl was.
X, which, by the way, X, which was set in the '70s and involving, like, is it like a slasher movie, but involving a porno that was being filmed
making a porno
at a
farmhouse, and it turned into a slasher. And that's the thing. I'm not a big slasher movie guy.
Yeah.
That's not my interest. And Pearl is a slasher. But really, it's a lot more tension, and, like, you know that something's off with her, and you don't know exactly what's going to happen, but you're like, oh, you're in danger. Like, there's a lot of that going on.
And Mia Goth gets to...
And Mia Goth is great. She was my favorite part of X, and I thought she was really good here. David Corenswet plays a projectionist who, like... So basically, she is... Pearl is this girl who lives on a farm. She is in her early 20s, which is a very young 20s.
Okay.
Her husband is off in World War I. And she is home. There's an influenza pandemic going on. Mm-hmm. Her German mother is very paranoid about it, doesn't ever want to leave the house because her father caught the flu, and he is now basically in a wheelchair and basically almost comatose.
Yeah, because, like, he's not alive.
She has to feed him and give him medicine and help him out and that kind of thing. He's basically just stuck in a wheelchair, like, twitching a little bit.
Yep.
And Pearl wants to go off to Hollywood and be like a dancer and all this kind of thing.
Right.
So she goes into town to get the medicine, and she meets this projectionist and gets these ideas about going to Europe and all this kind of stuff. And all the while, her mom is sort of emotionally abusing her and talking about how she's broken and this kind of thing. But it turns out maybe that Pearl is a little murderous. And that goes on kind of a rampage by the end. And I found this... I thought the story was actually really interesting. I thought the character was really good. And the cinematography is stunning. Like, it looks... It has he drew inspiration from like Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
So it's got this sort of Technicolor,
That kind of heightened saturated thing, but like in the way of early Technicolor.
Yes.
And there's a monologue towards the end that's just...
Oh yeah, she has a monologue that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And just really, really good. Like, Mia Goth, it just gets to shine in this.
Yeah.
It is good enough that I liked it, and I want to see Maxine now.
Which hits Max, I want to say, Friday?
Yeah.
I guess when you make a movie called Maxine, it pretty much has to go to Max.
Yes.
No matter what the rights are.
Well, if it's on Max, it doesn't matter, because I won't see it. Unless I decide to get it so I can see the Penguin and Maxine.
it's movie night.
Yeah. All right. Nick, you want to talk about Long Legs?
Sure. I mean, I kind of started at the a few minutes ago, but this is Osgood Perkins, who is... why am I blanking on...
The son of Anthony Perkins.
Anthony Perkins. I blanked on Anthony Perkins.
And Anthony Perkins was a weird cat.
He was
a weird cat. He not only played weird cats, but he was an odd dude. I believe closeted much of his life, although I don't know if that was like an open secret or not. But
I know he took Osgood to like his sets and stuff, so he grew up on like Hollywood sets and things.
Interesting.
And I'm sure had some sort of ramifications on how he views things.
Sure. Now, let me ask Nick, I think his most prominent movie prior to this was The Black Coat's Daughter. Have you seen it?
I tried watching it. And I could not get into it.
It didn't take. Okay.
It did not take.
But you like this one.
This one I had to sort of... I have one big criticism.
Nick Cage, isn't it?
Well, that is a pretty big thing. Although I've fallen off of my I have to see everything Nick Cage does, because most of the stuff he makes is crap now.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. Trust me.
Once you go down that road.
Part of the reason I wanted to watch this is because your and Serena's visceral reaction to it. And one of the criticisms...
But it's also like it's a movie that also did very well. Like,
did
a
very well.
Movie that was a big success.
And overall had pretty high percentage like of positive reviews.
Yeah, I don't know
how,
but
it did. I think it's 85%. Yeah, right. Yes. This is definitely one where...
Is it still at 85%?
I believe it's still at 85%.
People didn't come to their senses?
No. You didn't.
Then my hate campaign must continue.
Your campaign did not work.
I'll see if I can review bomb it. I do love a good review bomb.
The one thing I will take issue with is the kind of stuff before... Like, when this was out in theaters, all the, like, the hubbub about it being, like, one of the scariest films. How they did all the, like, the reaction shots to people in theaters and stuff?
And it's not it's not even that kind of movie.
No, I'm like, this is not terrifying. This is not scary. It's weird.
You know, it's funny you mention that, Nick, because I, last night I saw a retro movie poster for the old, 70s or maybe 1980 movie, like The Howling.
Yeah.
Early 80s, maybe.
Yeah.
Joe Dante movie about a resort where it turns out that a lot of the people there are secretly werewolves.
It's a good movie.
And the poster build it, it's like imagine your worst fears come to life or your greatest fear come to life. I was like, a resort full of werewolves? So specific. Like, sometimes they just, like, the hype machine for horror just focus it. It's like, I think because the only language that some people, like a kind of casual movie fans, know to talk about horror is, was it scary or not? Not like, did it have good character cinematography and all the rest of things we normally associate with movie, but just scary or no. And this, that became the campaign.
This was not Barbarian. This was not Host. This was not, like...
Even those aren't, like, super scary.
No, but they've got moments.
But they have very high attention moments. And that's not really what... Long Legs was
about. Basically about a serial killer that's been active for decades and about an FBI agent. This takes place in the 90s.
Yep.
About an FBI agent who is basically somehow able to get on the trail and solve much of what has been unsolved.
She has psychic-y powers.
She has psychic-y powers.
But she's also
turned out to be something else.
She's also a weird loner and...
Very odd duck.
And an odd duck.
Now, I haven't seen this. Let me ask you guys. How long are the legs?
Well, pretty long.
Okay.
7.3 feet.
Okay. All right. Good. If it was 8 feet, I was like, I'm never going to see
it. I know
this,
you were looking for a specific answer.
7.3 feet?
I want to make sure.
That's acceptable.
So Nicolas Cage goes full on Cage.
Yep.
I mean, there are moments where I'm just like, there's a sequence with him in a station wagon.
I mean, he's a little bit
like,
Cage in a slightly different way.
Yeah. Well, apparently he based the character Long Legs on his mother. And I'm like,
you think next time he visits her, should she be alive, she's like, thanks for that.
I mean, I would have liked to see him like, Mom, I want to base a character on you.
She's like, oh, are you doing a drama? He's like, well, kind of. It's dramatic. It's a vile serial killer. Supernatural, possible.
But also, when you got to the end of this movie and to the big, like, reveal.
There's some reveals and things.
I'm like, how is that horrific? That's kind of crazy and laughable.
Yeah, there's some...
I rolled with it because I'm like...
It's a reveal.
I've never seen that before, and it's a reveal.
Yeah.
It's a little out there.
Nick, it doesn't sound like you liked this movie.
No, but here's the thing. I liked the aesthetic. I liked the ride.
I will say this. He has, as much as, like, Ty West does, he has an aesthetic.
Yeah.
It's a different version of it, but, you know, I want to say since A24's kind of rise to prominence and you got, what do they call it, heightened horror or whatever it was, there has been kind of more elevated horror, there has been more attention paid to kind of the aesthetics of these things beyond just, you know, blood everywhere.
And this is Neon.
Right. Neon is A24's little brother.
Little brother, but usually it's more kind of like out there and a little crazy.
Yeah, well, like I saw the TV Glow was them, and that is a sort of actually more thoughtful movie. It's really it's like a sort of a melancholy drama with just light hints of surreal kind of horror.
Yeah.
But it's not a scary movie either.
Right. So yes, Long Legs. I enjoyed. I've thought about the movie more than I expected to.
Yeah.
Basically, what I assumed was going to be a horrific 2 hours spent turned out to be.
I actually could have guessed that you would like it because it's not like without its craft. I just think it's what he's doing with it and his like. I didn't really care like her character that much or her interaction with her boss. Which it seemed like they were kind of a two-man FBI. Like they were the entirety of the FBI, other than the occasional. Let's send some SWAT people out.
Right. I mean, there was that third person.
It's very stylized. Like, you know, whenever they would show the interior of the FBI offices, it was always like that set angle.
Well, it's almost like...
And Perkins, they would always show the poster of the president.
Yeah, it was almost like Perkins saw Silence of the Lambs and like, I could do that. And then it was kind of this
weird
offshoot.
He said that he was going to try to make as many references to it as possible.
Oh,
which
did
is,
he?
Yeah, like, okay, I think in interviews he said that, and I was like, I don't know if that's actually filmmaking. It's a choice, but
it's a referential choice that he made. And
but there's like a zillion references. But for me, all it did, it was end up making me think, oh my god, Silence of the Lambs is so much better than this. I'm like, I need to watch that again.
Jonathan Demme was amazing.
Yeah,
he knew his craft was.
He kind of invented a modern suspense genre with that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Nick, you would recommend this
if you have any inkling or of like, okay, I might watch this at some point. I'd give it a shout. I mean, it's...
And let us know, because we need to know who's right and who's dead.
Well, right now, if we're going, it's 2-1, so I'm definitely losing.
I haven't even seen it. I just hate it.
I told you the ending. I mean, you know what happens.
But I'm Randy, not going to like it. What if you get Ty Wested? What if it's another Pearl? What if
I get Ty Wested? I don't know.
Yeah, possible. You never know. Nah. Kid backpedal. He won't.
Maybe when you do another Nicolas Cage-a-thon.
I'm never ever doing that again.
And you're going to have to rewatch.
Fool me once.
That was so rough on Randy that he stopped doing the TV podcast he's been doing for years. I entirely quit the
podcast.
Afterwards, I'm sure that was the precise reason. He was
I'm out.
No more. No more. Cage broke him.
All right, Nick, you had a couple others you're going to mention.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I was also going to mention Cuckoo, which is another Neon.
That was the one that had the weird little indie trailer where a young woman is, like, riding a bike and a person is running along beside her at night, and it's scary.
Oh, that was creepy. That trailer was creepy.
Yeah, the trailer's creepy. The movie, again, is where Neon excels at creepy trailers. The movie is less creepy, but this one I actually thought...
I've heard it's bonkers.
It's a little bonkers, but it has something to say. But it focuses on a young girl who... moves in with her estranged father as they move into a new house in the German Alps.
Oh, really? That's where that's
and it's like on this like kind of secluded area where it's a new resort.
I got the impression it was just like a rural area in the movie. I didn't think that they were in the German Alps.
German Alps.
Okay.
And it's like on this resort area that is like a new kind of popular thing. And the head guy there is a doctor played by Dan Stevens, who, if you saw Abigail and a bunch of other stuff...
I'm a fan of Dan Stevens.
Dan Stevens is in a place right now where he's just playing bonker characters. Okay. And I'm for it.
Sure.
Because he plays kind of over the top very, very well. But
I want to make a list of people who do that occasionally.
Yeah.
I know a few other actors who are pretty good bonkers people.
But this movie, as you might have guessed, is about sort of trauma, deals with, like, her relationship with her, like...
Actually, I wouldn't have guessed it.
A strange sister that, or half-sister that she, like, kind of doesn't have a great relationship
with. A24 and I guess also Neon do both have a tradition of, like, all horror movies are secretly about processing trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But
which, it's actually worked out surprisingly well for most of them.
I think the aesthetic of this one is what kind of goes for it. They're, like... If you saw the trailer, you might have seen one of the best scenes, where she's riding a bike on a road, and as she's going through streetlights, she's seeing her shadow, but something is slowly coming up.
Yeah.
The monster in this is freaking cool. I will say that. There is a monster.
I heard it's bloody. Did I remember reading that in some trailers?
There's a little bit of blood. Okay. It's not, like, excessive. Like, it's not crazy.
Okay. Not scared
but
for a cure level.
I think the less said about this one, the better. It's an interesting ride.
Okay.
And it's got an interesting, they do English, German, and sign language.
Oh.
It's very cool. I like when films integrate kind of that kind of realism into it.
Yeah.
Where it feels more like the real world. Where right, you're going to run into various things.
Right.
Not
every culture is the American English-speaking culture.
Correct.
I don't know if that's accurate. Most of my experiences have suggested that is the case.
And then the last thing I'll mention is a new horror television show on Peacock. It is called Teacup.
We talked about the trailer for this.
We saw the trailer a couple
weeks
ago.
And weeks back, yeah.
This is the
show about
with Yvonne Strahovski.
Yeah.
About sort of a family on, I want to say it's like Illinois, or basically some kind of role. She's a veterinarian. And then one night, weird shit starts to happen, power fluctuations, animals are acting really weird, and...
Is it that they feel like they can't leave the area?
No. Their son, something happens to him.
Huh?
He,
What?
Well, we don't quite know yet, because something is sort of downloaded into him, and he starts, like, speaking in tongue in a lot of ways.
Okay.
And then a person comes onto the property and starts to paint a line around the property.
That says,
don't leave.
Right.
And don't trust anyone. I will say the
gore... I have to say, like, if a person paints a line around my property and says don't leave, I just take it up. I take it at face value.
I mean, I would too. Some of the people on this don't, and there are ramifications.
I would 100% get the ramifications. Someone paints a line around a thing and tells me not to do a thing, I'm going to do that thing.
You're like, this line? Step.
That line? Yeah, exactly.
And then just instantly a jaguar leaps out of nowhere.
Yep.
I will say the blood in this is gore-tastic.
Oh, okay.
I was very surprised at how kind of R-rated the show.
The jaguar attacks are that brutal.
Yeah, they're really brutal. They're so brutal.
I don't actually want to know, but like, there's, yeah, I don't want to know what the nature of the creature or,
I was actually
or
really,
if it's psychological or what.
Did one thing that I thought was really clever is that basically these are like 25 minute episodes.
Is it complete?
No, there's two episodes out right now. New episodes are hitting every Thursday.
So you would say you don't know everything that's going on.
Oh God,
on.
No.
Okay.
But it really kind of throws you into the deep end at the beginning.
What's the smoke monster?
The smoke monster.
That was a show from like 20 years ago. Yes.
But it kind of throws you into the deep end. It doesn't explain everything at the beginning with all the characters. You're sort of learning about them as the story progresses. And
Sometimes that slightly breaks my brain.
It feels very Stephen King-ish.
Okay, yeah.
And I think the
Is the writing decent?
I think the writing is actually pretty decent. And I can't remember who's doing it. I think it's Dan McCullough, who is a name I recognize, but... It's one of those... I'm not sure what else
he's
done.
I hope they can escape the long legs.
And the other lead in is Scott Speedman, who's been in a number of things. I think he was on Grey's Anatomy at one point.
Okay.
But...
Oh, well, where is this streaming?
Peacock.
Peacock. Nah, it's out of my circles.
So I feel about Max, Dave.
Yeah.
Randy has Peacock.
I have Peacock.
Right.
Peacock is underrated.
You will watch this, and I will watch the thing on Max, and we will trade stories like old tales of lore.
So that I'll feel like I watched it, and you feel like you watched
this. That's correct.
Nick's already done that for you.
I need the longer version.
These guys didn't keep our pact.
Yeah, we haven't even gone through the Rabbi Terminator pact. Nick would not believe us to make any kind of agreements right now.
I've watched four episodes of Terminator Zero, and Randy's right. It's worth watching.
Thank you.
Okay. I will point out I was never to be trusted. Any words I said were just words.
I see.
All right.
Trying to make some pact with the Fae or an angel with Loki or something like that. I just immediately, I'm going to break this.
I'm going to
break
this
in about 5 minutes. It's like you stepping over the line, Randy.
Yep.
It's not even... They're like, you gonna really watch all those shows? Nope.
They're like, but you ate all our food. Yeah, it was good. Thanks a lot.
That was
I gotta
good.
Go.
Yeah. Am I in trouble or what?
And then a jaguar, Fae jaguar.
And a Fae jaguar attacked me, and I turned into a tree.
A long legs jaguar attacks you.
Long all right. All right, that's it for us this week.
Oh boy.
And we'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo Joe.